Okay, good morning to William and Grania Doherty, who join us on the program now. Both of you, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Greg, for having us, and thanks for giving us this opportunity to us. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Greg.
And I'm sorry to be speaking to you under these circumstances, because you've been living through a nightmare now for quite some time. Your home affected by defective concrete blocks. William, do you want to start off with when it became apparent that there was a problem?
Well, I suppose very quickly, getting the house and building on my father's land back in 2005 was ultimately we were getting to build our dream home, and we were getting to build it and plan it together as a husband and wife. So essentially what we were doing is we were creating our world. But that all changed very rapidly in 2016 when we were at, when we had friends over at a party, and another neighbor next to us visited the house to collect the children after we were, you know, we'd been having fun out with the children, you know, in the garden and playing on the trampoline and the bouncy castle. He took a look at the house and he said, William, I'm very sorry to tell you, but you're afflicted with the same problem that I have. And that's when we walked around the house and took a look then at the exterior, particularly on the windward side of the house. It was very apparent that the cracks were ever widening. It was the thickness of my thumb at the top, right down to, you know, the thickness of a coin at the bottom. And that only then continued to grow over the weeks and months ahead.
Did you go through a period of denial, or did you accept from the get-go that there was a serious problem?
Well, I didn't actually speak to Grania too quickly because, you know, you sort of, I don't know, as a man want to hide it from your wife, maybe initially. You go through a range of different emotions, I suppose, Greg. And what happened then was, then there were different conversations being had and like and just around, you know, locally, people talking about their homes, and it was getting to the point where I just recognized I'm gonna have to, you know, speak to Grania. And
and Grania, can you remember Grania, can you remember what it felt like when you were given that do you remember, Grania, what it was like when you were given that information?
I do. I'll never forget it. It was actually the night after the party,
Night of the party. That's right.
You were up above in the kitchen.
Yes.
And I had said, what were you chatting to the local neighbour about? You know, sounds. You know, I don't know. Like, what were you chatting about? And you had said, William, just Grania, do you remember the primetime program that we were watching? Like, I don't know, how long ago was that? Was that a good few months?
2016. It was about 2000. Well, it was previous to 2016, but yeah. But basically,
I do remember watching that primetime program and sitting back saying, God help those people away over there in that part of Donegal, not thinking that it would ever come to our own doorstep, really. So you had broken the news, I suppose, just to say, I think maybe.
Well, I just remember going around with that neighbour and, you know, being deep in conversation and, you know, reflecting back on it, we were in such a serious conversation that I'm only assuming that Grania must have been looking on going, what are they chatting about? So that's where it sort of came to a head then. I suppose maybe Grania came to me and said, what were you talking about that night? And I was just standing chatting to Grania, and she was lying down on the couch. And at that point, I broke the news, and I could see clearly in Grania that there was just absolute, you know, a crestfallen face falling to the floor. Our world started to essentially crumble from then on, really.
Yeah, people think it's just the houses. And when I say just the houses, that's really significant. But it's not, isn't it? It's our lives. It's everything begins to unravel, because everything, an awful lot of us, is in our what's often our forever home.
And I suppose as parents as well, you know, you do feel a responsibility and a duty of care to your children, you know, because you are, I suppose, the sole protectors of them as well. And what your initial instinct and your natural instinct is to, okay, we will have to act, and we will have to protect and, I suppose, safeguard. So that's when we, I suppose, engaged.
I have a great thing about my own home, and I think a lot of people in Ireland are like that, you know, your home is your castle and you're very proud about building it up and making sure that you put your best effort into your home. It's your it's your forever home, and you take great pride in trying to make it the best that it can possibly be within your own means. And so we sort of put our heart and soul into our homes. We put the best of what we can afford into our homes. And sometimes maybe to the point where, you know, you're saying to yourself, well, we'll do this because we can afford it. And you're putting yourself nearly in a position in other ways sometimes because you want just the best for your wife and for your family.
Yeah, and I think for most of us, or many of us, and I'm certainly in this situation, everything I have is that. That's pretty much it. That's what I can bequeath the children. That's maybe if I ever, that's everything. And if that's gone, I have literally nothing. And I think a lot of people with homes that are falling down around them, they're in the same position.
And what it feels to me like is, and the word I would have had there was, if we don't have our home, we're sunk. And it's a scary proposition to think all of our, a culmination now of all of our lives' work. Mm-hmm. And I'm working now 20 years, and Gron, you're the same. We're yes. And you know,
she just works harder, William. Just a little bit less. It's about equal.
We're teachers, and we work hard, and we're taxpaying, and you know, everything that we've earned, and it's the culmination of all that hard work over those years that's culminated now. And you know. Yes, I suppose to an extent we're saving a little bit too for college for children, because you've to plan ahead like that. But ultimately, the home is, you know, it's our life's work, really.
Yeah, indeed. And it's hard to escape it, too. We'll get on to the matter of the court case in a moment. But Granny, it's hard to escape it, too, because it's your home. There's no respite, is there? You know, it's not like a difficulty at work or something else in your life whereby there's some sort of a refuge. It's your home and it's ever present. You wake up there, you sleep there, you eat there, you live there.
Yeah, homeworks are done there. You know, family parties are held there. Dinners are cooked, as you say, Greg, you know, everything. And it's your haven, and it's meant to be your place of haven, you know, your sanctuary, I suppose.
Continue that, please.
No, I just, you know, when I start thinking about this and talking about it, and you know, I know it's important to talk about these things, and you know, it does evoke a lot of anxiety in me. It really, really, really does. And, you know, just that sick feeling that you get in your stomach, you know, of the stress, of the turmoil that we did go through, and that we continue to go through, and all the other families, obviously. But I suppose during the remediation works, that was a period of unbelievable stress. It really, really was. It was unimaginable. And, you know, I was on a job share at the time, because our little boy, Fergal, who was a toddler at the time, had speech delay, and he was attending speech and language. So I took a job share. We were lucky that we could take a job share and work with him at home.
We made a conscious decision to make sure that we supported him and to give him every chance.
So the days off then, you know, when I wasn't to be at work, when I was to be at home helping him, like, there are the days that I just, I absolutely hated being at home. I dreaded the days that I was at home. And I took myself and Fergal off, and we did a wee bit of work sort of in the car, and it was looking back, it was just crazy.
Surreal, you know, just almost. It was an escape, whatever you can do. Can you talk to us a little bit about the position of your house and the timeline of potential schemes versus the decision to borrow again for something that you should never have had to borrow again, another 50,000 for this remedial work you mentioned. How did you come to that decision?
So, Greg, we looked at the house and we decided, you know, 2016, something's going to have to happen. My father-in-law visited the house and he said, William, if you don't get this house sorted, I'm going to take these children down the road with me to protect them. So there was that fear and that, you know, anxiety, both in Gráinne and in obviously other family members, the wider family community. And basically they, like, the onus and the responsibility, I felt it fell to me to step up as a father, as a husband. And we started then speaking to different people about, you know, the right steps to put in place. So we got an engineer out to do a visual inspection. And from there, then we got down to business. He gave us, you know, suggestions as to what we could do. So we got down to removing the exterior, the outer leaf. And of the house and the garage. And on investigating, like on looking at the blocks, you could clearly see this is just an ordinary man who's, you know, I mean, I'm not a trained expert in concrete, but it was clear to see that the blocks were defective. You could see the difference in the material. I could actually crush the blocks with my hands. You could crumble them in your hands. And so the plaster that we had up was actually masking the issue behind. And what was happening behind was the blocks were absorbing and the moisture, and they were deteriorating. And I always have this analogy in my head. It's like Weetabix. When it's dry, it's fine. But when it gets wet, it turns to mush. And essentially, now, whether I'm right or not, you know, there's experts out there that will be able to, give us a better understanding. But from there, we took the exterior relief down. We rebuilt it, put up scaffolding ourselves. We worked as a team, myself and Gráinne.
Oh,
and we put up the cling film on the windows together and put up the scaffolding together. I just remember going away at 6 o'clock in the morning to get scaffolding with the children. Just every step and every effort we made, we tried to keep the costs of the building down and the remediation work down. And it culminated in, we took out a loan of 50,000, Greg, but it took 64,000 because we had a little bit of money put aside. We spent all of it. So a total of 64,000 to get the whole works done again, both the house and the garage.
And before we then move on to the next part of it, is your house now safe from these defective materials? Has this remedial work worked?
No. So what we did was we took down the outer leaf. We couldn't take down the inner leaf because essentially that's a full demolition. So now we have bison slabs in the house from the initial build, but and the weight of them and the weight of the steel, you know, as load-bearing steel to support the bison slabs across the house, create an awful weight on the blocks that exist on the inner leaf. They haven't to date been removed. And so that deleterious material still exists. We took the blocks and got them tested, Greg, with Queen's University in Belfast, a fellow called Barry Rankin. He was the expert there. And it became clear from the report that he gave us that there was 42% mica present, and then there was it's more than just mica. There's other deleterious materials involved in this as well. Mm-hmm. Pyrite and pyrolusite and pyrotite are all elements that are all defective or make the block defective. And so we've learned across the number of years, like, just little elements of technical language around it. And essentially,
but you've been forced,
Greg,
to. It's crazy, really. Next thing you're speaking like a concrete block expert. That's where the space you found yourself having to occupy.
Greg, it's been a steep learning curve, but what's culminated in is that we've got a house now with the exterior block having been changed, and the interior block still having those previous deleterious material laden minerals in them. So that, and they're the load bearing blocks, and so there continues to be a great concern, a grave concern on both of us.
It's almost like, Gráinne, though, you're being double penalised now because you can't access the old scheme or this new scheme, even though you're still the victim of these defective blocks. But because you decided to try and at least, you know, temporarily or otherwise fix this yourself, you're excluded from any scheme having spent your own money.
That's right, Greg. That is absolutely precise. And I suppose, you know, during the remediation works, you know, there was an awful lot of mixed emotions. You know, there were a lot of tears. And then, you know, there was a lot of, like, there was a big sense of injustice, you know. And I would have said to you, William, do you remember? I would have said, this isn't fair. Like, why should we have to pay for this? And you said, Gráinne, look, someday we might get maybe recompensed, or it might be okay sometime, and just put your head down, get on with it, and we'll suffer the pain of having extra, you know, financial pressures. Just we have to do this for our family, and I suppose that's what we did. But then again, then when the word came out about the scheme, and then we found out then that we were ineligible for the scheme, well, that just lit a fire in me, really. It really did, in my belly.
No, before we get to that, can I ask, and this is not in any way to try and pitch you against a campaign, for example.
Of course.
But when all the conversation's been going on about 100% redress and leave no person behind and all of that, and it's all very well intended, did that sort of, was that like a double hurt for you? That is, well, you aren't talking about us, we are going to be left behind. You know, even if you get the bells and whistles scheme, it seems that we're going to be excluded. Did that make things any worse? And as I say, there's no malice in the question. I'm not trying to pitch you against any group, but I'm just wondering how that must have felt.
It did, and that little fire inside me burned a wee bit brighter as well.
That lit the flame even more, right?
It did. It absolutely did. And, you know, in fairness to all those people who worked tirelessly, you know, with the Mike Action Group and, you know, and Paddy Diver and all those people, and there's many, many more that, you know, I don't even know of, but myself and William, we're not in social media. We're not in Facebook. We're not on Twitter. And I think what we did was, when all of that sort of came to light, which was really, really good because it highlighted the issue, you know, and it got people talking, and, you know, it assured people that, you know, we've done nothing wrong. None of us have done anything wrong. But myself and William, when that all came to light on social media and all of that, we nearly took ourselves away from it and hid under it, because we thought, we just can't deal with this now. You know, just the enormity of it. And we just, I suppose, I emailed TDs and Donegal County Council, even emailed Taoiseach and Tánaiste, and just gave our situation, saying, you know, that we had paid for this ourselves. And I suppose, like other people did as well, you know, and just feeling really let down, Greg, you know, and left behind, when, you know, none of this was our making, you know, none of the stress is our making. And anybody else is making for that, you know.
And I mean, so, you know, when in any house, you know, an awful lot of the tensions can be caused about decision making, money. You know, a lot of these, even in the strongest relationships, are the trigger points. I mean, this was just a melting pot of a wedge to drive yous apart. But thankfully, yous are sitting there close together. And then, as you say, you know, we're charged with protecting our children, but you can't pretend this isn't happening. You have to involve them in some way. I mean, you know, we've talked about it already, and we'll talk about the case in a moment, but it's just an incredible, incredible amount of stress on yous two.
So what I feel, just in that whole side of things, I've got, Grainne has, you know, dealt with, we'll say, emailing on one side, and I've dealt with, you know, the remediation work and working on the other side with just with maybe men working. And then together then with just this last few days, the media piece and all of that, we team up then. So I just think that, you know, there's a dovetailing that goes on there. And I think in any good partnership, there needs to be the strengths on both sides, and that we pull together and we just work through it. There's definitely a stress, and we've taken steps back and looked for, you know, an opportunity to reflect. And every evening we always spend time making sure that we're good at the end of it all, and we just keep working at that, because ultimately that's what will get us through.
Okay. Right. So what we're speaking to in the context of, and you referenced some media work, your legal action. It's part of 10 Pathfinder cases to be taken by Dublin law firm Coleman Legal. And we spoke to representatives of theirs in recent months. Over 1,500 homeowners in Donegal have signed up to the High Court action to date, with the number growing week by week. Now, last week, the first statement of claim was served on behalf of William and Grainne Doherty, and named Cassidy's, Donegal County Council, and the National Standards Authority of Ireland. This is the first of a number of statement of claims expected to be served on the three defendants. So, with everything that you've been through and the journey that you're on and where you want to go, why did you decide to become involved in this, the only version we can really have of a class action here in Ireland?
Again, it's just, I suppose, it is essentially to look for justice and to seek justice and accountability for ourselves, Greg. and on behalf of the rest of the innocent people who are going through this harrowing situation in the beautiful county of Donegal, and beyond, obviously. You know, do you want to say
anything? No, just in that regard, like taking the case, Greg, we know that there's questions to be answered. We know that the three main stakeholders, the three defendants, that, you know, we're never going to move this forward through the government scheme, through the provisions that they are making for us under what is not 100%. And there's never going to be answers sought or gained through that scheme. So the journey through the courts is the only way where we're going to ensure that, you know, we get questions answered. And in the statement of claim, you've got 109 elements of questions put to the defendants. And that's our opportunity for our story to be heard going the court route. And it's their opportunity to be answerable and accountable for the wrong and the injustice that we've suffered. And not only ourselves, but a vast number of houses, homes, families across Donegal, Sligo, Leitrim, and down into County Clare, and goodness knows how far and how extensive it's going to be by the end of all of this.
We actually feel very lucky to have the opportunity to go with Coleman Legal, isn't that right?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, because they have given us confidence and they have given us support and they've guided us through with, you know, and we've trusted them and we continue to trust in their work. And, you know, as William said, the case is evidence-led. There's over a year's work done with international experts in their field and a whole legal team. So, you know, we're delighted to be able to, I suppose, have our story heard, the facts laid out, accountability sought.
Well, that's what I was going to say, Grainne, because, answered. Yeah, we've talked about, let's just say, the redress scheme. And because of the nature of this case, because of the nature of law, in terms of actual verbal accountability or blame, we have to choose our words carefully. But this is a platform, I suppose, whereby, you know, arguments can be made, evidence can be brought forward, people have to reply to that. You know, it's in this space really whereby there'll be a more open conversation about accountability perhaps, and then of course the courts will have to decide where that lies. But it's a different space to where the one we've had to operate in for the last number of years. I think you understand where I'm coming from.
I do, yes, we do. And I suppose it's really important to get an assurance as well through the courts or through the legal route, you know, that this can't ever happen again. Like it's too massive, you know, of a situation. It's too stressful. It just impacts people's lives, as the whole country can see, you know.
Yeah. In terms of expectations, look, what are your expectations, or have you managed your expectations, or has this process started and let's see where it takes us? Where are you at, William, in that regard?
Well, I'm very clear, Greg, in that while we hold this 27-page statement of claim, and it's a serious document, for me it represents seeking justice, seeking accountability. And it's a strong body of work that has culminated in, you know, a year's work led by, obviously, the evidence, led by experts and brought together by experts in their field. And then the legal team then working on the law that pertains to all of that. And Greg, for me, it keeps coming back to getting our story heard. It keeps coming back to getting justice and having accountability for ourselves, but also going forward, in my job as a teacher, there's oversight. There just doesn't feel like there was adequate oversight. Now, ultimately, you know, that's for the courts to decide, and all of the statement of claim, these are allegations being made. So it's for the courts to listen to both sides, hear the story out, but ultimately, I would want there to be changes in how things are conducted into the future and for lessons to be learned. That's how I feel. But it boils down to justice and accountability for me.
Yeah, and we're in this ironic space, really, whereby things are progressing. This case is now before the courts, and yet at this time, if a house was being repaired, there's no real true way to make sure it's not being repaired again with defective concrete products.
And that's where we're at. Mm-hmm. We're actually in that situation where we have got new blocks on our exterior of our building, and we're not 100% sure, Greg. And that's the concern and the fear that is in both of us right now.
Do you have any idea how long this journey might be, Grania, how quickly things might progress?
It all, I suppose, depends on the progression of the case, you know. But our understanding at the minute is that the defendants will find, like, have found out, you know, and they have a certain time frame, I think, to respond. And, you know, and the enormity of the case, and I suppose how long it's going to take. But I'd say it's going to be a fairly long, you know, time frame. What do you think?
But this is, Greg, a significant milestone, that, isn't it? Go ahead, William.
I would suggest that, you know, the number of cases that it involves, that and the detail and the length and the material and the evidence that's there, it's a body of work for ourselves, for our own case, never mind the many other cases that are under Coleman Legal. They've got in excess of 1,500 cases, going towards 2,000 cases now installed with the High Court. So that in itself is a serious, you know, number, and it's going to take a long time for the courts to get through all of that material. So we're not under any illusions as to, you know, how long it's going to take.
Okay.
And it's hard to actually quantify and put, you know, put an actual timeline on it, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I understand that fully. But I suppose you're going into this process with your eyes wide open, and you've been through so much. I presume you'll be able to sort of tolerate this until such time as there is an outcome. Anything you want to add, either of you, William or Grania, before we wrap it up?
Well, I have a very strong sense of just other people in the community who are suffering as well, and that while we're on our journey and everybody has a very, very different, you know, story to tell, I would, and I have this just in my mind, in the back of my mind, that everybody needs to be resilient and stay the course. We're at this and involved in this since 2016, our own personal story and our own personal journey, and we're not going away. And that's 6 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those that are in power, those that are leading our country, need to realize that MICA is real and it needs to be dealt with. The deleterious materials, I'm sorry, that it's more than just MICA. But that there are other, many, many other people out in the community there that are suffering in their own nightmare and their own way, for the very same reason, but have a very different angle to their story. And what I would say to them is, stay the course. We are looking for justice, and hopefully our story and our journey will show them that it's possible, and, you know, absolutely join the Coleman Legal group, because they're pushing forward and they are serious about, you know, seeking justice, and they're serious about seeking accountability. And ultimately, that's really what the story is all about.
Yeah, and this is a crisis that really should unite us, shouldn't it? You know, I mean, whatever actions whomever is taking or whatever campaigns are ongoing, this is to, they can complement each other. This isn't a competition. This is a lot of people trying to get justice, trying to get recognized, trying to get accountability. We are all, or should all, be pulling in the one direction finally, Grania.
That's right, Greg. And I suppose in a nutshell, there's a lovely wee Irish proverb, a Seanochal, and it's Niniarco Carla Hela. So that's just exactly what you've explained there now. Well, that sort of explains what you're saying there now. Yes, we come together in times of hardship. And I think we have. I think a lot of people have, you know, the communities around us have, and beyond. I suppose I would like just to say as well, you know, that Sean Hegarty and Adrian Sheridan, you know, and the team of Coleman Legal as well, you know, they've been very good to us. They have been very supportive and they're given, either instilling a sense of confidence in us, you know, to, I suppose, to try and manage this and deal with all of this and what's ahead of us as well.
Yeah, for sure. And just to reference that, the cases are being funded by a non-for-profit group involving Adrian Sheridan. He's a Bunkrana engineer working in Dubai, and also Sean Hegarty, another Bunkrana businessman living in County Kildare. Well, listen, I can't do anything else other than wish you the best going forward. And I just hope the right thing is done. Oh, we're not looking for an awful lot, really, are we? It's just that the right thing is done. And that's it, really, isn't it?
I suppose, yeah. And we teach our children. We teach our own children, like many other people do as well. We try and teach our children. We've been brought up the same way, you know, the difference between right and wrong. And that's really, you know, we want wrongs to be corrected, and we want justice, and
and very importantly, too, what you have said, you don't want any other family to have to go through, or any other individuals or families to have to go through this again. We shouldn't need to have to keep saying that, but unfortunately, the regulations still don't seem to be there. Right. Okay. William and Grainne Doherty, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's greatly, greatly appreciated.
Greg, thank you for giving us this opportunity just to have our story heard in Highland, and really appreciate the fact that you've taken time as well. Thank you.